2 Samuel chapter 13 in your Bibles. As we continue, there's a skipping over of a certain number of years. We don't know exactly how many years, but 2 Samuel is kind of showing the arc of David's reign. The first half of the book shows his rise as king, his rise and his success and how God has blessed him. And then we see that turning point with the sin with Bathsheba and the killing of Uriah. And then we're going to see this slow downward progression in certain ways. And so we already saw in the last chapter that he is confronted with his sin. He is sorry for his sin and God forgives him, but he gives a prophecy that evil days are ahead and God's going to bring evil upon him out of his own house. And so the next chapter, chapter 13 here, is the fulfilling of that. And I've entitled the message today, God Brings Evil on David. And it's going to be in some ways sudden, in other ways gradual and ongoing. And we're going to, this will be the first half of the sermon that we look at today. We'll look at the second half next week, Lord willing. I've entitled it, God Brings Evil on David, and subtitled it, David's Dysfunctional Family. And so we're going to see David's family fall apart right before his eyes. And so let's pick it up, 2 Samuel chapter 13. I've divided the chapter into several divisions. And the first thing I want to look at is Amnon's lust. Amnon was the very firstborn son of David. He's his eldest. He's his strength and his pride. And he becomes a failure. He doesn't end up living very long. We see the beginning of the mentioning of Amnon and the end of Amnon here in the first chapter. So 2 Samuel 13, verse 1, it says, "And it came to pass after this, that Absalom, the son of David, had a fair sister whose name was Tamar, and Amnon, the son of David, loved her. And Amnon was so vexed that he fell sick for his sister Tamar, for she was a virgin, and Amnon thought it hard for him to do anything to her." And so we have Amnon, this firstborn son of David. And by the way, we'll mention a couple of these verses later on, but 2 Samuel chapter 3 shows that so many of David's children come from different wives. He's got, and that's going to be part of the problem as this passage and of David's family unfolding, is that he has wives and he's got all these children that are half brothers and half sisters. And so Absalom and Tamar are full brother and sister. And then you have Amnon, who is a half-brother. And so it says that Amnon loved Tamar. Maybe we could put the word love here in quotation marks. Because he doesn't really love her. What we have is lust. We have physical attraction. We have infatuation. It's immature. But it is not real, true, biblical love. He is lusting after her. And the huge difference between love and lust is that love is selfless and lust is selfish. That's across the board 100% of the time. Lust is selfish. What can I get out of this? How can this please me? Love is selfless and giving and self-sacrificing. Love is not, the biblical love is not the appropriate word here for Amnon. He has this forbidden desire that he has because, and the reason that it's forbidden is because she is his sister. She's his half-sister. But listen to what it says, Leviticus 18 and verse 9. "The nakedness of thy sister, the daughter of thy father, or the daughter of thy mother, whether she be born at home or born abroad, even their nakedness thou shalt not uncover." And so when the Bible says this, that their nakedness you're not going to cover, it means both you're not allowed to have a physical relationship with them outside of marriage, and it means you're not allowed to marry them. Both would involve a sexual relationship eventually, and so this was forbidden by God in the law. If Amnon really had loved Tamar, he would never have done what he does to her on multiple levels and for multiple reasons. What he does is, in a moment, is that he commits incest. Incest is never love. He ends up raping her. Rape is never love. That's pretty obvious. It's just lust and selfishness. Love, by contrast, always does right by someone. We've looked at this in the past. We won't belabor the point. But the Bible says that love is the fulfilling of the law. If you love someone, you do not sin with them or sin against them. And if you do that, then at least at that moment, you are not loving them. Love will never encourage someone to do wrong. Love will never force someone to do wrong. Love will never cause someone to do something that will bring them under God's judgment. Whenever you sin, now you're under God's judgment. And if you love someone, you will never want them to be under God's judgment. You will lead them away from that. Love will never commit incest or adultery or fornication or any other sin. If these sins are ever committed, the first thing you can mark down is this is not love. Love is the fulfilling of the law. So Amnon lusts for, he has a strong desire in the wrong way for his half-sister Tamar. And that leads us to our second thought, number two, Jonadab's plot. There's someone that enters into this picture all of a sudden, a man by the name of Jonadab. We pick him up in verse 3. It says, "But Amnon had a friend whose name was Jonadab, the son of Shimeah, David's brother. And Jonadab was a very subtle man." And so what it says about Jonadab is that he is a cousin. He's David's brother's son. So he's David's nephew. He's a cousin of Amnon. And I don't know how, if these are fast friends, they grew up doing everything together. But it says, it uses the word friend. Amnon had a friend. It says he's very subtle. This means he's very sly and crafty. If you use the word wisdom, you use it in the worst way. He's just got street smarts. He's got a way to figure out how to get away with something, how to come up with a plot. And that's exactly what it does here. And so here's what he says in verse 4. "And he said unto him, why art thou, being the king's son, lean from day to day? Wilt thou not tell me? And Amnon said unto him, I love Tamar, my brother Absalom's sister. And Jonadab said unto him, lay thee down on thy bed and make thyself sick. And when thy father cometh to see thee, say unto him, I pray thee, let my sister Tamar come and give me meat and dress the meat in my sight, that I may see it and eat it at her hand." And just like that, Jonadab, the way the passage describes it, it's almost as if without his heart even skipping a beat, without even thinking about it, this plot just flows out of his mouth. He is so fast to come up with a deceitful and devious plot. So what is Jonadab doing here? He's looking at a situation and immediately, but very carefully at the same time, devising a wicked and deceitful plot. Reminds us of what it says in Proverbs 6, verse 16 says, "These six things doth the Lord hate, yea, seven are an abomination unto him." And so there's this list. We'll skip to verse 18. It says, one of the things, "an heart that deviseth wicked imaginations, feet that be swift in running to mischief." And so this is what Jonadab's character is. He devises, he thinks up wickedness. Now, all sin is sin. But sometimes people, they wait and somebody gives them an idea and places a seed thought in their minds, and it kind of primes the pump. And then they take that idea and they run with it. So that they are not the inventors of these thoughts. Someone else invents it, and then they run with it. But Jonadab, he is a mastermind. He's one of these people that invents, that devises evil. He is the tempter in this story. He kind of plays the role of the devil, and we'll see it later on as well. He kind of plays the role of the devil in the story. That Eve is there at the tree, and the devil comes to her and says, hey, what about this? Why don't you do that? And Amnon comes to him, and he just says, you know, he's having a bad day. Hey, why are you so downtrodden? He says, well, you know, I love my sister Tamar. But it says that he thought it hard to do something to her. But Jonadab thought, Yeah, no problem with that. Here's a way to overcome it. He gives them these ideas. He is the tempter. And so Amnon has a fair sister that he lusts after, but he had a fear that kept him back from that wrong desire. But then he had a friend that encouraged and emboldened him to go that wrong direction and seek that wrong desire. And then Amnon does his folly. So Amnon on his own would not have done this. He sees roadblocks. He's afraid. He says, it'd be hard for me to do something. Either he didn't have access to, being able to have a relationship with her, or he just thought, it's too hard. It's just not going to work. He has fears, but he has a wrong friend that talks him into doing something he wouldn't have done on his own. Have you ever been there before? Have you ever had a friend, and we'll put friend in quotation marks, have you ever had someone talk you into doing something that you never would have done on your own, and then all of a sudden you find yourself doing it? I've heard of people that have gone to amusement parks, and this would be me. I don't like the spinny rides. I stay away from the spinny rides. They make me sick. I can go on one spinny ride and it ruins me for the whole rest of the day. And going to the happiest place on earth is now the most miserable place on earth. All because of a spinny ride. I heard of someone that would go to an amusement park with his friends, and his friends knew this about him, but they thought, we'll just have fun with him. We'll talk him into this. And it said, hey, let's get on the spinny ride. Let's get on the teacup ride. And he says, no, I won't do that. He says, come on, you chicken. And because of this motivation, calling him a coward and chicken, they get him to get on the ride. And he gets on and he feels sick. And after two or three of these rides, eventually on the ride, he throws up inside the ride, all over. He's in this barrel that's rolling, and he's supposed to walk through it, and he throws up. He loses his lunch all on the inside of his ride, and it's all spinning, and then he slips and he slides out. And then the people behind him on the ride, they would get on and they would slip and slide out the ride, and girls would come out with chunks in their hair. And it was a disaster for everyone, all because this guy had some friends that wanted to have more fun at his expense than they actually loved him. And so Amnon had a friend. We need to be really careful in life. And that's obviously a kind of a funny story. But it gets very serious very quickly when people have friends that talk them into doing things that they wouldn't have done on their own. I heard a story about a young girl, teenage girl, that's at church for a church youth group activity, and someone there, one of her friends, introduced her to some drugs. She'd never done drugs before. She never had a desire to, but her friends coerced her into doing it. She takes the drugs, and the very first time, one time ever in her life, and it blows her mind, and she, just a few days later, dies of taking those drugs. She did something she never would have done on her own because of her friends. And friends are vital. When I went off to college, my father, I didn't know this at the time, but I found out later that one of the greatest concerns he had was who my roommates were going to be, who my friends were going to be at college. Because getting around the wrong friends and influences, it really doesn't matter how grounded you are. Anyone can be led astray and turned aside by the wrong friends. Listen to a couple of verses, Galatians chapter 3 and verse 1. It says, O foolish Galatians, who hath bewitched you that ye should not obey the truth? He sees them. They were on the right track. And by the way, later it says in Galatians 5 verses 7 and 8, ye did run well. Who did hinder you that ye should not obey the truth? These Galatians, they started off on a good track. They were discipled. They were following God. And then they got around someone that led them astray, that fed them some wrong doctrine, gave them bad advice, and they got off the right track. They ended up believing some religious heresies. And the reason that so many people go the wrong direction, I mean, we obviously have a heart that's bent the wrong direction. But sometimes people And by the way, sometimes people will do in private what they would never do in public, because outside there are people that would see it. There's shame, but they'll do it when no one is looking. And sometimes these things that they would never do out in public, they end up doing them out in public because of a friend, because of a wrong influence. And influences are much stronger than we often give them credit for. Young people, you know, this is our society. People need to be socialized. They need to have lots of friends, and they need to hang out with those friends and spend more time with those friends than they do with anyone else in life, than their authorities, than their parents, than teachers at school. Those friends and parents are sold a bill of goods. They think, oh, I need my child to learn how to adapt to society. I don't want them to grow up and be, someone that doesn't know how to relate to people. So we need to get them around friends. And these people, and they're surrounded by people who are ignorant, people who are immature, who don't have any clue about how to live life. And they come together and they pool their ignorance together and they go off and make horrible decisions. And the parents are blindsided. Oh, I never thought. Oh, you didn't think that just being around the most immature people possible wouldn't lead to bad decisions? There's an old statement that says, show me who you run with and I'll show you who you are. That people are often just like the friends they hang around with. Birds of a feather flock together. You see that happen so many times. It's often said, if you lie down with the dogs, you get up with fleas. And the people that you hang around will rub off on you. Now, why is this? Why is it that friends often do the same things and act the same way? Here's the reason. Because if there's an influence, they want to be liked by their friends. And so they end up doing the things their friends want them to do so that they will be liked, so they'll be accepted. And they're set up for failure right away. 1 Corinthians 15:33 says, be not deceived. Evil communications corrupt good manners. It doesn't say that they might or they could. It just says they do. Evil communications corrupt good manners. Get someone that's going the right direction, but get them around evil friends, evil influences, and they will corrupt him. We need to be so careful about it. One more verse about it. Proverbs 13:20. He that walketh with wise men shall be wise, but a companion of fools shall be destroyed. You and I can decide our fate, so to speak, our destiny. It is wrapped up with who we hang around with. You walk with wise people, they'll be a good influence on you. They'll be a good example and they'll encourage you in the right way. Get around fools, and not just the fools will be destroyed, but the companion of fools shall be destroyed. You get caught up in the same thing. Maybe you weren't even the bank robber. You were just the getaway driver. You didn't even know they were robbing a bank, and all of a sudden you're caught up as an accomplice in what they're doing. The people we surround ourselves with are critical. It is vital to our success that we get away from the wrong friends. And Amnon was one of those friends. Jonadab. Amnon had a friend. And because Jonadab was in his life, he ended up going the wrong direction. Leads us to number three, our third thought. Amnon's gross sin. So he starts just with this desire, but because of his friend, he ends up going headlong into what we read next, starting in verse 6. So Amnon lay down and made himself sick. And when the king was come to see him, Amnon said unto the king, I pray thee, let Tamar my sister come and make me a couple of cakes in my sight, that I may eat at her hand. So he's lying down, he's sick. What are you sick with? What are your symptoms? Well, I need cake. You know, that's my problem. I need some cake. If you can just have Tamar, and you know, if anyone makes cake, but I just love the way that I've never had her make cake before. I don't even know if she can make cake. But have Tamar come and make me cake, and that'll make me feel better. And David walks out thinking, okay, this is weird. My grown son, my firstborn son, is a moron. So he walks out and he allows it to happen. Verse 7, then David sent home to Tamar, saying, go now to thy brother Amnon's house and dress him meat. And David obviously is very naive in this whole thing. He has no clue in the whole story. He has no clue what's going on with his family, with his children. So Tamar went to her brother Amnon's house, and he was laid down. And she took flour and kneaded it and made cakes in his sight and did bake the cakes. And she took a pan and poured them out before him, but he refused to eat. And Amnon said, "Have out all men from me." And they went out every man from him. And Amnon said unto Tamar, "Bring the meat into the chamber, that I may eat of thine hand." And Tamar took the cakes which she had made and brought them into the chamber to Amnon her brother. And when she had brought them unto him to eat, he took hold of her and said unto her, "Come lie with me, my sister." And she answered him, "Nay, my brother, do not force me, for no such thing ought to be done in Israel. Do not thou this folly. And I, whither shall I cause my shame to go? And as for thee, thou shalt be as one of the fools in Israel. Now, therefore, I pray thee, speak unto the king, for he will not withhold me from thee." Howbeit, he would not hearken unto her voice, but being stronger than she, forced her and lay with her. Then Amnon hated her exceedingly, so that the hatred wherewith he hated her was greater than the love wherewith he had loved her. And Amnon said unto her, "Arise, be gone." What a horrible tale here. Why, by the way, does Tamar, so he does this lie, he gets her to come in and make these cakes, he sends everyone out but her, and then he propositions her and says, "Hey, lie with me." And she says, "No, this would be horrible, don't do this. But talk to the king, and he won't withhold me from you. He will allow us to get married." Why does she suggest this? You know, it was forbidden in the law, we just read it, that if it's the daughter of your father or the daughter of your mother, you're not allowed to be with them. Does she not know the law? Does she actually want to marry her brother, just like he wants to be with his sister? Is she just in desperation, trying to say anything to escape the moment? You know, just trying to, maybe she doesn't think this, maybe she doesn't believe it, but, you know, let me just say anything in desperation to cause the moment to pass, and then we can regroup and figure it out. I don't know for sure what her reasoning is, but it doesn't work. And he goes ahead and forces her. And then it says an interesting thing. So it says twice that he loves her, quote unquote. He has this lust for her. But then when he gets what he wants, it says immediately that he hates her so deeply that the hatred is greater than the love that he ever loved her with. And that's one of the ways that we see that he never really loved her to begin with. If he really loved her and he had sinned with her, he would have been sorry for what he did. He would have been apologetic. He would have tried to do something to make it right. But instead, he just responds with hatred and dismissal. And so, you know, basically he had conquered her and then he moved on. He was kind of like a hunter and he just, you know, kind of got something under his belt and then, you know, kind of like a scalp. A trophy, a prize. He had conquered her. He had won. And then he kicks her to the curb and then moves on. And so a horrible relationship here, a horrible way that this plays out. And that leads us to number four, is Tamar's grief. So Amnon has disgraced her. He has done horrible things to her. And now, verse 16, we see her response. And she said unto him, "There is no cause. This evil in sending me away is greater than the other that thou didst unto me." But he would not hearken unto her. Then he called his servant that ministered unto him and said, "Put now this woman out from me," and bolt the door after her. And she had a garment of divers colors upon her, for with such robes were the king's daughters that were virgins appareled. Then his servant brought her out and bolted the door after her. And Tamar put ashes on her head and rent her garment of divers colors that was on her and laid her hand on her head and went on crying. So Tamar here is in deep grief over what happens. For a girl in Israel here, this was about the worst thing that could happen. She no doubt had dreams of one day, and we don't know exactly how old she is, but of one day growing up and finding just the right person to marry and loving him and living happily ever after. And all those dreams are dashed here. She was saving herself for that person. She's got this robe of many colors that signifies her virginity. She is proud of her virginity. She's proud of her purity. She's looking forward to giving herself at the right time to the right person. And all of a sudden, her purity and her virginity are taken away from her and thrown down into the gutter by her own brother. He hates her, and then he throws her out on the curb like garbage. By the way, in verse 17, where he says, "Put now this woman out from me." The word woman is italicized in King James Version, which means it's not in the original. Literally, what he said was, "Put this out from me. Just get this out of my sight." Like she's just a bag of garbage. Just throw her out on the street, kick her to the curb. Doesn't care at all. She's not even a person. He treats her as subhuman here. She's devastated. She is unloved. And so she tears that garment that signifies her virginity and her purity, because she no longer has her virginity. And she publicly grieves. So she is devastated. And that leads us to number 5, is Absalom's bitterness. All of a sudden now we enter into the scene another player, and his name is Absalom. He is Tamar's brother, older brother, and we see it in verse 20. "And Absalom her brother said unto her, Hath Amnon thy brother been with thee? But hold now thy peace, my sister. He is thy brother. Regard not this thing. So Tamar remained desolate in her brother Absalom's house." So at this moment, Absalom finds out, and he kind of guesses what happens. You notice what the first question out of his mouth? He sees Tamar grieving, and her robe of virginity is torn. And the first thought he has, the first question is this Amnon? Has Amnon been with you? It seems that it was no secret. Maybe it was an open secret. But David doesn't seem to pick up on it at all. When he says, "Hey, can I have Tamar come and make me some cakes?" David just thinking, "Huh, that's interesting. He has a good relationship with his sister." But Absalom, I believe, has seen the way that he looks at his sister. I think he was disgusted by it, but probably didn't think too much of it because he thought, there's no way. I mean, when you're the king's son, you can almost have any woman that you want in Israel. Almost any woman would want to marry the king's son. That would be, so he could have anyone, and he thinks he would never go for his own sister. I mean, that's just too disgusting. So he doesn't think anything of it. But when he sees it happen, he knows immediately this was Amnon. And he doesn't do anything right away. He just says, "Okay, come on into my house. You can stay with me. Don't worry about it. Put it out of your mind." But the wheels start to turn in Absalom's mind. And we'll see later on in the chapter that he acts on it. But first of all, is just this underground, unnoticed bitterness that begins little by little to grow. A plot begins to form in his mind. And Absalom here perfectly illustrates the truth of what bitterness does. It doesn't always lash out right away. A lot of times bitterness is very patient. Bitterness is very calculating. When you've been wronged, or here, this is someone else that's been wronged. It wasn't even Absalom that was wronged. It was his sister. But whenever there's a wrong that's perceived, bitterness doesn't always lash out right away. Sometimes it will wait. By the way, one of the first things it's going to do is that it will wait to see if justice is done by the proper authorities, which here is David. And then we're going to see that David doesn't do anything. And so Absalom's hope for justice being burst, then the bitterness begins to grow. Bitterness will often be patient and wait until just the right moment to exact its revenge, to inflict the most possible damage. Listen to Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 15. It says, looking diligently, and this is for any of us, looking diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled. So it says that bitterness is a root. There's a root of bitterness. What happens with a root? A root is underground. You can't see it. You don't know it's there until it begins to grow fruit, until something starts to push up. But there's not enough power to push something up until there's roots that go down. Something has to go down first before something can come up. And if you ever see anger and malice rear its head, it's always because it started underground. It started hidden with a root of bitterness. And while there was patience, nothing happened. And so bitterness had to take matters into its own hands. It begins to fester and grow underground. Listen to Ephesians 4. Well, this will be the last verse we look at for today. Ephesians 4:26. It says, be ye angry and sin not. Absalom was right to be angry. It says, let not the sun go down upon your wrath. There's where Absalom started to go the wrong direction. He let the sun go down. He didn't deal with it right away. He didn't handle it through the proper channels. And then the next verse says this, neither give place to the devil. It's very important that that verse is included there. Whenever you're wronged, whenever you are angry about something, you can be angry, but don't sin and deal with it quickly. Do the right thing. By the way, deal with it quickly doesn't mean just go out and murder someone fast. It means do the right thing. Deal with that anger properly, but do it fast. Don't let the sun go down as quickly as you can, because if you let the sun go down, if you let time pass, then the devil comes in. We give place to the devil. The devil starts to whisper in your ear, hey, that wasn't right. You were wronged. You deserve better. That person deserves horrible things. And then it starts to grow underground. And we need to be aware. The Bible says we are not ignorant of the devil's devices. God tells us right here, one of the devices of the devil is to come in through bitterness. Have you been wronged? You need to learn how to let it go. We'll talk more about that next week with what Absalom should have done. But if you don't let it go, if you don't deal with it fast, it will eat you alive until it springs up and troubles many. Many are defiled. It will eat you alive, and then it will eat many alive. And it's often said that bitterness, when you're bitter towards someone, it's like drinking poison and hoping that it kills the other person. It doesn't kill the other person. When it's undealt with, when you just hold it inside, it just kills you. It eats you alive on the inside until you finally lash out and many are defiled. And that's what we're going to see happen with Absalom. So we'll end there and pick it up next week, and we'll see the way that the proper authorities should have done something but didn't do something. We'll come back and finish the chapter next week. Let's pray together.